Welcome to UEG Podcast, where we talk about scientific discoveries, educational insights, and professional development within the world of digestive health. Whether you're a clinician, researcher, or just passionate about GI content, this is the podcast for you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Agla, and I'm the host of UEG Talks, educational, hopefully fun dive into GI world and beyond. We are very happy to have you with us for another exciting episode. So today we're talking about leaders, most often inspiring, mobilizing MacGyvers, juggling crisis and everyday mishaps, and sometimes taking an off-road to a little dictatorship. For this, we're coming to Germany, where our today's guest leads his team, occasionally named online or COVID-19 president, who managed to turn a devastating situation to UEG's advantage, secret party host, and a legendary past UEG president, Axel Dignes. Welcome to UEG Talks, Axel.
It's very nice to be here and to be invited for this podcast. I'm really happy to share some of the experience I had during this COVID time, which was probably unpleasant for all of us. But I think we learned great lessons, and this probably helped all of us to shape our future and really to develop ourselves a little bit.
Yeah, we definitely saw the outcomes of your leadership that were outstanding. And we also heard the rumors. Okay, so Axel, one thing is boss and quite another thing is a leader. What do you think is the difference, and how does a boss become a leader?
I think there is really a major difference. My personal opinion, I think a boss is giving orders and is expecting obedience, and a leader is more an inspiring and motivating person trying to foster collaboration and to build a team. So I believe as a leader, you focus and guide your people. You use your influence properly. You're not self-controlled. You are more the V person, and the team is developing something. And this really will help to develop and achieve the results you would like to have. You coach your team through mistakes and don't criticize mistakes all the time. You don't use the power to push the people, but you try to create a vision and really to move the people forward. So I think there are clear differences. And perhaps in short, a boss manages tasks while a leader really develops people, and the people manage then to do a lot of different tasks.
And it's also about the power dynamics, isn't it? Then boss is more hierarchical or vertical, whereas the leader is more horizontal.
I think this definitely holds true. And I think sometimes it probably has to vary. So if there is a real crisis, sometimes there have to be very quick decisions, and then horizontal may move a little bit vertical. But overall, you should have some people you can trust and can exchange with this. But if you lead a big team, let's say you're a big company leader, or you lead UEG with like expected 30,000, 40,000 people in the GI community. And even if you just look at our team in Vienna, there are 50, 60 people. So if you really discuss with everyone in a big crisis where you need to make a decision in minutes or hours, it may sometimes move. But overall, the plan is to be horizontal and take responsibilities in situations where it's difficult to exchange with everyone.
Yeah, so it's like in the wartime, the military takes up with its hierarchy over political decision makers.
Yeah, definitely.
Talking about crisis, you were the president when the COVID hit us. And most of us were either working in COVID-19 wards and researching hydroxychloroquine or sanitizing cucumbers. The focus was definitely not on polypectomies and enhancing your endoscopic skills or knowledge in IBD. What were the hardest obstacles to overcome during that time?
I think they were really manifold. And I personally named me the virtual UEG president. So I think this is something which really happened. You had a lot of disrupted operations and disrupted events. All the things I really like and love, meet people, create networks, meet with people in your networks, exchange ideas, had to be done in a completely different way. So usually you have a cup of coffee, have a cookie, in the evening, perhaps a beer or a glass of wine, and you exchange something. And we were all put in our hospitals or even sometimes being put at home. And I think a lot of operations and really events, meetings were disrupted, were cancelled. We had no in-person conferences. And then the other obstacle, we were at the beginning of this technically not that well equipped. So now everybody, and as we do it here, we do a podcast, we do virtual meetings. At this point of time, a lot of people had not the technical equipment, didn't know how to do it. And sometimes people were probably also not happy to do this. And with the crisis, there was the financial instability, losing your income, losing, for instance, members of society. We were thinking how we could continue all the things we were doing. And something which was very important for me, we have probably one of the best teams in the world. Our office in Vienna is a dream and is really perfect. But we rely on also getting some income with meetings, with congresses, and this was all breaking apart. And we had to consider how many people we can still have working for us or not having working for us. So there were really a lot of very, very important decisions going with this. And I remember when I took over my presidency, we had one of these council meetings in Vienna, and we were meeting with all the different societies, all the different representatives. Early in the year, we had the National Societies meeting, and we were discussing what I would do throughout my presidency. And like 2 months later, we were all isolated. We were being at home, and we really had to change the whole world. And I think this was really difficult with all these technology gaps, accessibility gaps, new ways of communication and making everything publicly available. So I think there was a lot of adaptation to the situation and empathy needed to get all the people behind you. And this in a world which was completely new to, I think, to all of us.
So now that you had time to reflect on your presidency and the obstacles and the outcomes and what went well and what might not have went so well, what do you think made you overcome those, of course, with the team? And what are your focus areas as a leader, be it at your home or leading a UG?
I think it may be even quite similar. So I think you need to be a leader. You need to, for instance, set clear expectations to the whole team. You need to outline a strategy. You need to outline some goals. You need to communicate those. And then you need to bring the team behind you. For me, I think it's very important that you trust people and that the people will trust you. And for this, you need to be transparent, fair, and I believe somehow consistent. And this was, as I mentioned, not that easy in these days because we didn't have the knowledge for things which are granted now, but nobody was knowing what was COVID. We were reading different journals. We were changing our opinions. And I remember I told my people, today I may say this because this is the best of knowledge we have. And in 2 days, I will tell you something very difficult. Don't think I'm getting brain dead. I just do what we know today and we may change it. And I think sometimes it happened. So remember the times we were wearing no masks because we were not having masks and we were telling everybody, oh, it's not that important. You can just take a piece of paper or something and it will help. And we were not allowed to go to any place with at least 2 or 3 masks and like what we are doing now because we had it. And some of us were even knowing probably that this was not of medical reasons, but it was just of shortage of not having the equipment that was needed. I think in such a situation, it's very important that you also see your individual strength and your individual qualities, and you need to create a team. There are always some people who are much, much smarter than you. They have different experiences, and you need to collaborate. You need to give up ownership for things you don't know and cannot do, but you need to take over the responsibility and bring the team together. And finally, when it's getting to all the directions, you need probably to make sometimes the decisions, and I think this is very important when you're not making decisions that are needed, that this may also break up a team. And then what I believe is that you need to recognize the quality of the team. You need to, let's say, sort of celebrate contributions of individual members. And what I personally feel is that you don't need to celebrate in the far end, that for sure you will do, but small steps, you have to say that you are proud, that you are happy that something was built, was made up. And for this, I think you need to be very transparent, fair, and create trust within your team. With this, you also probably promote psychological safety as far as you can, not ensure that there is financial stability or safety for all of them.
So this is kind of intermediate gratification. You're splitting the end game to smaller parts so that you can get satisfaction in the process as well as a team leader, right?
I think this is very important because when you have goals that are far, far away and that seem not to be reachable, you make them into smaller pieces that you can get to certain marks, and then you move one step further and one step further, and you always have to recheck in such a situation when there will be conflicts. You have to solve them constructively. You have to find solutions. If you will not get a tool, if you will not get the technical equipment, if you don't have the money, and then always celebrate and get the team behind you that you can move on.
It's very appreciated every time when your boss is happy with your work and expresses it. I liked where this was going because you already mentioned a couple of times fairness being a leader and also managing a lot of interest. I mean, you had your vision and you do as a boss back in Germany. Then there's the situation that you have currently, what's the status quo on what you're coming into. And there's all these interests from societies, from your team members. It could be financial. It could be regarding power or influence. How did you manage during that time? And how do you manage this in your team back home?
I think there are several very important things. What I personally feel is that you need empathy. And the people who are really close with me know that I have a lot of empathy, and sometimes I even have to cry because I'm overwhelmed by either what is happening because I'm so proud or I'm so unhappy. So I think this is something which is very, very important, and you need to be sort of consistent. So I think inconsistency, if you have different rules for different people, it's not good. If you cannot communicate, so you have to be transparent. Communicating clearly, stay aligned with the core values in your institution or in your hospital or in your family. And there you need to be tough to do this. And I think you cannot be ego-driven. You need to get feedback. You cannot really disregard feedback. You can say, I have a different opinion and we have to discuss about this. And I think you really have to practice humility. Admit that you yourself make mistakes and ask and invite your colleagues, friends for honest feedback. And what I personally feel when you are a leader or a boss, even worse, some people may not really dare to speak to you and may not really tell you about your mistakes. So you need like 2-3 fellow friends who really trust you and you can trust them, that they tell you, you made now a major mistake. This is not the way you should go. And then you need to consider this. And sometimes your best friend may not be the best advisor, but if you have like 2 or 3 and they all tell you, this is not the best way, then you really have to reconsider yourself. Otherwise, I think you will go in the wrong way.
You mentioned beforehand when we met that you're second in command. Actually, you ask them, is this right? Is it okay, right?
Yes, I definitely do. And what is something which is very untypical for me, so when everything started, probably I was coming back from the ECHO Congress, and there we started to see that everything will change. Then the borders were closed and my daughter was traveling in Eastern Europe. And I told her, I believe it's now better to come back. I see that all the borders were closed. So whenever she left one country, the border was closed behind her like 2 or 3 hours later. And at this point of time, I think one of the first time in my life told from now on, there are only two people making decisions in our hospital. It's me and my co-boss. And we will always discuss, but when you cannot agree, I make the decision. And I was really astonished because a lot of people were really happy that somebody was taking, and as I mentioned earlier, I take responsibility. I'm not sure if it's always the best decision and tomorrow I make a different decision, but this was really happy and the whole team was really glued together and is still glued together since this times.
So you did enforce the wartime structure in your team, right?
Yes, but I think everybody was knowing that there is always a way to discuss, because usually, and this is something some people also tell me, it's a sort of mistake. I'm a little bit too weak and too nice because I listen to everybody. And sometimes they tell me you cannot get 100% under the umbrella. It's good if you have 85%. There are always some people who have different opinions, and I like to really get the different opinions, because even somebody who maybe not believed to be the best brilliant advisor may have some good ideas, and we see it in our research. There are certain people who have never get funding because people were not believing this would be a good type of research, and later on they came out to be worldwide leaders. And therefore it's not always good what the majority is doing. Sometimes brilliant minds have something that they identify before the majority is identifying. So I personally believe you really have to consider everything.
Sure. And also it helps with the accountability. I mean, if you're always listening to yes-sayers, you could start to believe that you're godlike or something.
Yeah. No, that's true. And we see, for instance, it's much, much easier if you're in a big institution where there are a lot of grants, because those giving grants, for instance, believe they were doing so good all over the time. But certain areas in research have not been funded for quite a while, and some most brilliant papers. So I met the person who developed the anti-VEGF structure, and he tried to publish everywhere, and he was a surgeon. So surgeons are not really trusted to be world-breaking researchers. So ultimately, he published in the Journal of Surgery. So it was Judah Faulkman in Boston. And I think this paper was rejected by Nature, by Science. So he told this story. It was rejected by everyone. And this was the whole background of some of our most important cancer therapies. So it's not always the place where you work or the funding you have. Sometimes it's just the brain behind it.
The surgeons will appreciate your sentiment, of course.
I love the surgeons, and we work close together. And for me, it's also so wonderful. I was just being in the States. In Germany, the language is probably a little bit different, but the surgeons always say the physicians, and we are the surgeons. In Germany, all physicians are physicians, and the surgeons are also physicians, like the ophthalmologists or so, they are all physicians. And for me, it's always funny when they come up, the physicians do this, so as not being a physician.
Okay, Axel, we covered your end of the deal, being a leader, but what about the team's entirety? What makes, in your experience, for a successful team?
You need clear expectations, and you need these expectations in an open and respectful communication. The whole team and all the team members need to communicate. With this, you create trust, and leaders, for instance, should lead by example. They should be fair. They should be transparent. They should be sort of as much as possible consistent. You should really encourage collaborations, and you also should accept ownership of different ideas. Not everything is yours. As I mentioned earlier, and we had this also with UG, and the person who I told this to will probably remember, you lose together and you win together. So you celebrate as a team, and you also cry as a team. It's not just individual achievements. And what I personally feel is very important, you should do something to leverage the individual strength of everyone. So for instance, if it comes to the detailed work, I'm probably not really good. I have ideas, I have visions, but if I have to write 10,000 pages, I'm very happy when I get support. But there are certain people who really love to do this and do it in a perfect way. So everyone has personal weaknesses and has personal strength. So you have to really assign the tasks to each individual that are the most appropriate. And personally, some people believe everybody needs to do the same, otherwise it's not fair. But if you have a very young person who is able to run for like 10 hours and you have a person who has sore leg or something and cannot walk that much, then I believe it's ridiculous. Some people are better in languages, some better in creating ideas. So you really have to see this. And then even if you have a team, you need to adapt to certain changes. You need to give feedback. And personally, I believe I have a very good team, but the team is changing like every year, every half a year, not the full team, but you know, we have residents, we have fellows, some stay, some will not stay. So there is a change. When I started, I was the youngest in the team. Now I'm getting closer to being the oldest in the team. And this is an ongoing change. And when initially I was running with my team, I'm still running, but I'm not the front runner now. We go to parties and still I'm the one who is closing the party, almost closing the party at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning. But at a certain point of time, you will probably not do it. So I think there is probably a sort of long checklist what creates a successful team. But I think I mentioned the most important parts. And this is probably something which is important in medicine. It's an ongoing learning process. You are never perfect. When I went to medical school, I thought now you have done everything and this would last for the next 20 years. Now with the half-life of our knowledge of like 6 to 7 months, you have to really reinvent yourself and have to learn and have to do something. And this is, I think, also for managing a team.
Okay, so this is what's the perfect scenario. But what about toxic leaders, and when is it becoming dangerous? What do you think are the most dangerous traits for a leader? Or in this case, he's not a leader, maybe.
I think something which is very bad if you're just driven by your own ego. So if you just focus everything on yourself, this is probably not good. This is when you are putting out the sort of bossy type of leader and you become arrogant. I think what is also not good is if you lack empathy. So if you cannot bring yourself into the situation of your colleagues. We mentioned it's sometimes bad to be the only one making decisions, but if you don't make any decisions, so if you're indecisive, especially in a crisis or in a situation where you need something, this will delay important situations, will create fear, maybe confusing for someone. So therefore, you really need to develop frameworks and consult your colleagues. And what I feel is also very bad if it's inconsistent. So if you say today it's this way, tomorrow it will be the other way. And this is something which needs to be avoided because this will break up team, will create dangerous situations and will not be helpful at all.
Okay. Hopefully no one takes that road.
I hope so.
Axel, we would, of course, love to hear all those intricate stories and secrets that you hold, but we unfortunately have to at some point end. And you mentioned that at one point you were the youngest in the team. So what would be your advice to that younger version, having this vast experience all across the board? What would you advise to your younger self?
I think it's several fold. You have to look or at least I did it for me. I did look at my mentors, at my leaders. You have to take the best traits of these people. Usually it's better to have like 2, 3, 4 mentors, because I always tell my colleagues, you can never become as Einstein or as me. Every person has some good sides, some bad sides. Take the best sides, adapt them to your own personality, because if you don't like to sing, you cannot become a singer. And for instance, I cannot become a singer. I'm very bad with this, but I'm a great dancer. So I open all the parties, and everybody knows it. At all the big parties, I open the dance. And for instance, I love sports. Those who know me know that in my spare time, I'm the team physician of the basketball team here in Frankfurt, which is playing in the first German league. And I like these type of events. And there, for instance, you can also see great leaders. One of my big friends is the head coach of the German national basketball team, who won the world championship with Germany. And this was for the very, very first time. And the biggest thing about him is that he is a great leader. And the biggest thing is that he believes in teamwork. And even the best player was set to the bench because he was playing selfish and said, this was just good luck that you were making a basket over the full field. You should have passed the ball and then it would be 100% 2 points. And now you made 3 points, but this was only luck. And I think this is something where I, for instance, learned something from people like these in very tough situations, where you have the players, you have all the people in the stands shouting, crying, and you have to be steady and calm and make your decisions and make your final moves.
Okay. Thank you so, so much, Axel. As much as for your time as COVID president of UEG, as well as your time today sharing your stories and your knowledge.
It was a great pleasure, and I love to see everyone at the next UEGW meeting in Berlin, in Germany, in October.
Yes, and we want to see those dance moves.
You definitely can. This was also one of my ideas to create parties, and those who had been at the last UEGW, you had the big party, so I hope there will be further parties to come.
Of course, we can't wait to see those. So thank you, Axel. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Thank you, Igle. Wonderful.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to UEG Podcast. We hope you've found some new ideas, insights, and inspiration to take with you. Don't forget to subscribe, and if you like our content, please leave us a review and share our podcast with your colleagues.